Rosenberg is next. Support for WGTD comes from Jack and Drea, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, newly reimagined for 2020. A unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. More information at jackanddrea.com. Jack and Drea, a proud supporter of WGTD's morning show. And we welcome you to the Friday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. I'm delighted to be welcoming into our studios today, first of all, a faculty colleague and friend from Carthage College, Dr. James Ripley, Director of Instrumental Activities at Carthage, who is just back from yet another exciting, spectacular, deeply meaningful tour of Japan with Carthage's Wind Orchestra, and he has brought four members of the Wind Orchestra with him as well to talk about this exciting trip. And he's taken care to make sure it's a nice array of ages. So we have freshman Miley Riedel and sophomore Kitty Ann Nelson and junior Tim Wagner and finally a grizzled senior Mariah Hunnick. And they're going to be together along with Dr. Ripley sharing various experiences about what this trip to Japan was like, some highlights. And in effect, we're also going to be giving a preview of the Wind Orchestra's homecoming concert, which will be coming up this Sunday afternoon at 2 o'clock in Siebert Chapel, an event that is free and open to the public. So we welcome all of you to the morning show. Glad you're here today.
Morning, Greg.
Glad Mother Nature didn't make it too unpleasant a trip for any of you. So, Dr. Ripley, before we get into this specific trip, I want you to explain to our listeners your own specific connection to Japan and why Japan has figured so prominently in the work of the Wind Orchestra since you came to Carthage in the early 2000s.
Yes, beginning in 2001, I started both at Carthage and as a guest faculty at Sakuyo University in Kurashiki. And this came about because of a connection with the Eastman School of Music. I had done some clinic work there on a previous trip. And as it turned out, they wanted to bring me on board to do two concerts a year, one in November, one in July. So I did that for a number of years. And then at a certain point, it became just a natural extension to do an extension of this and an exchange program with Carthage. And so at that point, F. Gregory Campbell and I sat down and we decided it was time for the Wind Orchestra to do something special. And that was the start of it all.
And so that first time that the Wind Orchestra went to Japan would have been when?
2004.
Okay.
Yeah, we've gone six times now. This was our most recent as the sixth, and it's just been a real pleasure every time, but especially so this year. It was really terrific.
Great. So the first time you went to Japan, the very, very first time you went to Japan, what Japanese did you know? Or otherwise, what background did you have that made this a natural fit?
Well, unfortunately, I know about as much Japanese now as I did then. It's something that I can do a rehearsal, and I know the different phrases that are needed for that. But as far as a more basic conversation, I wouldn't be having this interview in Japanese with you. And you probably with me either.
Right. Well, and that underscores why you were accompanied not only by 45 students in the wind orchestra, but also by a professor of Japanese at Carthage.
Right. Yang Wan accompanied us as a partner in our Carthage Symposium program, as well as working in the global heritage part of our trip. And so she was very helpful in making all of the connections and translating for us. And we also had a tour guide with the trip for the whole time, and she was also very helpful. But it is something that we do give the students some background so that they can communicate at a basic level. And I think that worked pretty well for most everybody.
Great. I want to be sure to specifically ask Miley about the fact that she is a senior, and so, no, who's the senior?
Mariah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Mariah. Sorry, Mariah Honick is the senior. And so you are someone, you would be the only one in this group who has been to Japan before. First, in general, do all of these trips tend to play out in roughly the same way, or is each trip to Japan its own very unique sort of adventure?
They started out very similarly, but in the last three trips, they've all been pretty unique. We continue to stop at Sakuyo University and do a concert there and do an exchange. We always stop at Hiroshima and go to the Peace Park. And aside from that, it changes quite a bit. We have been to Tokyo, Kobe this time. We've played at a military base in Iwakuni City. So it's been pretty diverse.
Yeah. So so Mariah Honick, you went as a freshman and now back as a senior. Are you glad you got to go twice, or was this just a tiresome repeat of what you did 3 years ago?
No, it was amazing to go twice. Last time, the coursework that went along with it more focused on mythology and storytelling, so we covered a lot of traditional stuff. But this time, it was more about the modern society and modern rehearsals and stuff, so it was very interesting to have both perspectives while I was there.
Very good. So you have no regrets about going twice. Dr. Ripley, how does it work in terms of the young men and women who are in the wind orchestra? By and large, are they all required to go, required to do this? I suspect it is involves some expense for them. How is that handled?
Most everyone that's in the regular wind orchestra will continue on for the Japan trip. And this time we actually added a few other members that were in our concert band just to allow them a chance to have the opportunity. And not everyone was able to go due to some financial reasons, but for the most part it was the regular wind orchestra.
Great, which had to make you feel good in terms of the person standing on the podium leading them. It's nice that it's not a ragtag thrown together kind of group, but musicians are used to playing with each other.
Right. In fact, the very first piece of music that we played this year in rehearsal was something that we were going to do in Japan. So it's been something that we've been building on for a long time.
Very good. For those of you just joining us, we have with us Dr. James Ripley from the music faculty at Carthage and four students who are members of the Wind Orchestra. They are just back from a spectacular tour of Japan. So we have with us senior Mariah Honick, junior Tim Wagner, sophomore Katie Ann Nelson, and freshman Miley Riedel. Very good. So glad to have all of you here. So my understanding is that you folks showed up 4 or 5 days earlier than any other Carthage students to start J-term in order to prepare for your departure for Japan. So tell us what those first days were filled with, and I suspect they were filled. Filled with what? Who wants to tell us about that? Don't be shy.
It was a lot of survival Japanese. You know, just threw us right in there to get going on the language, and a lot of rehearsals as well. We had some reading to do just to start to understand the culture on like education and music rehearsals, and a lot of focus on the role of women in Japan, which was an interesting topic as well. But yeah, lots of rehearsals and lots of learning survival Japanese.
So tell us about learning survival Japanese. I mean, first of all, at a glance, it appears to be a language that has absolutely no relationship to our language whatsoever. How difficult is it to learn?
Well, Wan Sensei, as we called her, was marvelous in helping us. She was able to, so in Japanese, they don't use romanized characters like we do, A, B, C, D, E, F, G. They use actual characters. So she was able to take those Japanese words and romanize them for us so that we were able to see them in our alphabet and were therefore able to better figure out how to pronounce things.
Yeah. Oh, that would make a huge difference. So what kinds of things did you learn how to speak?
We learned numbers and greetings, a little bit to introduce ourselves to the other students that we played with.
Very good. Enough to function, enough to survive. Very good. Dr. Ripley, what went into putting together the actual repertoire that the group played? And I mean, what kind of things do you think about in constructing a program for something like this? How is it different from just constructing the fall concert or the spring concert?
Well, this is a special year because it's also coordinating with the 150th anniversary of Women at Carthage. So we wanted to combine a lot of things together into this tour program. So we were able to perform a piece by a Japanese female composer, mm-hmm. and we were also so lucky to have Jocelyn Hagen write us a new work, and we'll be premiering that as well on Sunday. But also, there's a little bit of understanding that has to go into how a Japanese band sounds, and so playing in that manner when you're doing a Japanese work is important, as opposed to something like a piece that we do of Americana called Sweet Louisiane, which is just a romp, you know, and it's as American as it gets. So we try to change the sounds, we try to change the manner of playing. So it's a balance of a lot of things, but there's some Japanese music, there's some American music, and one of the things that we've always had as part of our program is a soloist. And so we were able to actually have Katie Ann Nelson play for us this year a piece called Victor's Tale by John Williams, and it was just fantastic to be able to share one of our student soloists this time rather than a faculty.
So a piece for clarinet and wind orchestra? Oh, very good. And will you play that on Sunday?
Yes.
Very good. Look forward to that. So to the four students now, had all of you flown? I assume you flew to Japan. was this a first for any of you to be on that long a flight?
First for that long of a flight. I mean, I've been on shorter flights before, but that was a flight.
And was it direct Chicago to Tokyo or okay?
Yeah.
So how long a flight is that?
So we had about 12 hours from Chicago to Tokyo, and then a small 1 hour romp between cities within the country, just to get us in the right location.
Wow! So 12 hours on a plane. And now, in general, how was your time in Japan laid out? First of all, how long were you there, Tim? Let's stay with you. How long were you there?
Oh, geez, it was 12 days. 12 days. There we go. It was pretty nicely laid out to where we had enough time in between our performances to relax and actually get our mindset in the right place. We had our first three performances relatively packed together and then some nice free time to explore the countryside and the various cities and various more touristy areas. And then finally, one final last hurrah before we left at the Marist School.
Very good. I suppose when you're laying things out like this, you're not just, it's not just what you want to do, but you have to schedule things according to what various hosts can accommodate in their schedules. Can't be a simple thing to put together.
Well, honestly, it's pretty simple for me because I have a tour manager that handles all of that. Her name was Tomomi Kubo, and she arranged everything for the trip and made our time very one highlight after another. That was the way, whether it was sightseeing or whether it was playing, it just was just literally a series of highlights. And so, yeah, Tomomi made it work for me.
Very good.
Well, let's talk first of all about some of these musical experiences that you had. And one more thing for you, Dr. Ripley, and then we'll turn it over to the students. But as you were introducing me to everybody, it turns out that all four students here are music ed majors. And in a sense, that was a bit by design on your part, because this trip in some ways was put together with music ed majors especially in mind. How so?
We wanted to make some real connections between the students from Carthage and their Japanese counterparts. And so in some ways, it was simply being able to have some interchange after the concert, as well as playing side by side. Sometimes it was being able to actually do clinic work with the group. Mm-hmm. And that workshop setting was really very valuable, and that was the last stop that we made. And I've gotten so many positive responses back from that experience, from the people there, just being so thankful of having the opportunity to work with our students. And so it's a larger sense of connecting, but it is something that we've got so many wonderful music ed majors that we try to make the opportunities focused in for them.
Very good. All right, well, let's talk through what you experienced once you landed in Japan, and once you'd gotten over your ferocious jet lag and so on and got to the business. So what was your first big day in Japan, the first full day in Japan? Where were you? What did you do?
Well, our first big day was actually a concert and getting ready for a concert. We went to a high school where we were very happily greeted by all of the band students there, which was so welcoming and so warming to see. And we rehearsed, we had lunch in sections. So I'm a clarinet player, so I got to have lunch with all of the clarinet high school players at that school, which was so fun. Mm. We got to take a group picture together. And then we had a joint rehearsal because we were going to play some music with them. And then we had the concert.
Oh, that does sound good. Now, did the trombonists, for instance, eat together too? Or is that just a friendly clarinet thing?
Oh, yeah. So all the sections all together got to meet and interact and speak with each other. It was a really good experience to not only rehearse with them, but also get to know them outside of a musical context and just really make those connections between our cultures and their cultures and get to know them better.
Very good. So what was their level of English like? I mean, were they able to communicate with you pretty effectively, more so than I suspect you could speak Japanese? Were they able to speak English pretty well?
Right, it varied. We were able to talk about some things, like they're into Disney movies, and we talked about Frozen and showed each other our animals and just some fun stuff outside of music. Especially at the last school we were at, they have a strong English focus in their school, so there was a lot more communication that way.
Very good. And so they were playing pieces with you that they had rehearsed and you had rehearsed that you just had to put together then?
Right. We had two Japanese works for that program, a folk tune called Furusato, and then a Japanese march by really one of the most famous composers in that country. And so that was our first joint collaboration. Another time we did some other pieces I'm blanking on. Mm-hmm.
And so it was a relatively easy, seamless collaboration then, musically speaking?
Yeah, I would say that's probably the best part of things as I have taken students to Japan, is that even though the language is difficult at times to negotiate, when you've got a piece of sheet music in front of you and you've got people reading off the same material, playing the same music, working with them, that's really the highlight of things for me all the time, just to see how our students react to that.
Very good. So you were saying that this was a nice, warm welcome. Did you feel like you were meeting your own counterparts? I mean, did they feel like exactly who you were a couple of years ago in high school, or did you sort of feel like high school students in Japan are are different in some ways? I mean, did this feel like a familiar experience or very different?
I think, like, yes and no. There were some aspects that were similar, some that were different. Like, the clarinet section, we talked about, like, boys the whole time when we, like, made it. So, like, you know, just, like, silly, like, that's what high school girls talk about. Like, you know, so...
You weren't comparing, like, reed manufacturers.
Right. No, just fun, silly things. And so in that way, it was really similar. But, you know, there's a big difference, too, in that they, you know, career goals that they want to have or the things that they feel that they have to do in their lives. There's a difference there as well.
Very good. So that was the first day, was at this school, and then that day or that night, an actual performance with these high school students.
Yes.
All right. Day two. No, I'm sorry. Let's not do it this way. Let's keep talking about music. When was the next musical experience and collaboration and concert?
I think Sakio was second, right? Yeah. So we went to a university, the Sakio University, which is pretty similar in size and structure to Carthage, which was pretty neat. And we played with the university students and gave our concert. There.
So that was truly working with your own peers then in some respects. Mm-hmm. And this is a school you've collaborated with quite a lot.
Right. This is the institution that I've been working with for almost 20 years now.
Wow. Yeah. Good. And then after that, what other concerts were part of the trip?
Next was the elementary school concert. And that was, not to be like partial, but that was one of my favorites. Because after we performed for the elementary students, they had prepared stations for us to play games with them. So us clarinet players were so lucky. We got to do jump rope with the first graders. that was so much fun. So.
Wow. So you didn't get to play jump rope?
No, the flutes and oboes, we did calligraphy, and they taught us how to do the Japanese characters for both Japan and America, and they showed us how, and then we got to do it, and then they signed the sheets for us. And
oh, sweet. And Tim?
Low Brass played this cup and ball game with the second graders, and they were incredibly good at it, so much better than any of the Low Brass. So getting shown up by a second grader was an interesting experience.
Yeah, right. Humble pie. Very good. So in general, what were your impressions of these elementary students, and what did you think of them? What did they seem to think of you?
They were so excited.
Yes, so excited. And I think, you know, they were just kids, which was... makes sense, you know. For jump roping, what we did with them is a rope was continuously spun, and we had to run through it with them while holding their hands.
Oh my!
And I think one boy was like, "Ew, you're a girl. I don't want to hold your hand." So I mean, you know, it's just kids being kids.
Yeah, very good. So is this a school you'd been to before?
No, this was a new experience for me. But one of the really special musical parts of that concert was we played this same Japanese folk song, and the kids started singing along, and it was truly, truly moving.
Wow, that's great. Yes, hands across the sea.
Yeah.
Very good. After that, what was your next musical experience or collaboration?
So following the elementary school concert, we had quite a bit of time, a few days of just touring the country, doing some more touristy things, and then following that, those little touristy things, the last hurrah before we came home was the concert at the Marist Brothers International School, where we had more time to actually work with the kids. We had first a joint rehearsal, and then following the joint rehearsal, we split off into sections and sectionals, and us students from Carthage actually got to work and kind of work through areas that the Marist Brothers students were struggling with, and just trying to help them learn more so about the pieces that they were working on.
Wow. So really thrown into an educator's kind of role.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Were you doing this in English or Japanese or some mix of the two?
Well, I was speaking entirely in English because my Japanese is quite lackluster after those 6 days of survival.
Yeah. So you were... I mean, that's an interesting challenge to try to communicate mm-hmm. about musical matters when the language is not shared.
Yeah, an interesting component about the Marist Brothers International School was in class, they're actually required to speak in English. So their English was pretty good, and it made for communicating about music much easier because they're used to speaking in English in band class, so we were able to work that way. Although the clarinet group was kind of shy, so there wasn't much communicating.
Mostly playing, let the playing yes. say it all. And for any of you, had you already been in this kind of role before, or was, at least for some of you, was this kind of a first to be sort of be the teacher in the room?
I mean, it was fairly familiar. I'd done mentoring and that sort of thing, like in high school back with the middle schoolers, so it was comfortable.
For the rest of you, too?
Yes. A lot of the music ed stuff at Carthage, the program puts you into placements, so you get experience early on with it. It's really nice.
Right. Mm-hmm. So this was just a different way to explore all of that. And that was your kind of musical last hurrah, you said, mm-hmm. then, and then on your way home. For those of you just joining us, we're talking about Carthage's Wind Orchestra and the tour, which they just took to Japan. They are just back. And they play a homecoming concert on Sunday afternoon, 2 o'clock at Siebert Chapel. So Dr. Ribley did allow for a little bit of time for fun in the schedule, and it sounds like you had some really, really great experiences. First of all, are the students given much in the way of completely free time to just go do whatever the heck they want, or is it a little more sort of channeled activity?
Evening time is largely free, so that there are dinner opportunities, and then after that, we don't usually have any additional activities scheduled. So that really lets the students spread their wings a little bit and see what's in the cities. We've had good results with the hotels being in pretty busy areas, so there are lots of things that they can experience. So that's how the trip is organized, though, is most of the activities are during the course of the day, and then the evening is free.
All right. So tell us some of the places that you went as, in a sense, tourists visiting Japan, and some of the things you got to do.
Well, I think one of my personal favorites was we went to, help me with the pronunciation, Miyajori Island?
Miyajima
Island. And it is an island that they consider sacred, and there's this beautiful shrine on it, and there's all these deer that roam the island, and they view the deer as sacred. And me and my friends, you know, hiked up part of the mountain. There were all these traditional stores. It was just gorgeous, and we got to watch the sunset on the island, and it was beautiful. It was breathtaking.
Wow, I've not ever heard of that. What is it again?
Miyajima.
Miyajima. Is that a place they've gone before?
Yes, not every time, but on occasion we've been able to make that happen. It's a really easy fit after being in Hiroshima. It's very close, and so those kinds of things are an opportunity.
Very good. I know that one of the most meaningful things that you did was to visit the so-called Peace Park in Hiroshima. Tell our listeners about that. What does one see? What does one experience when you visit that place?
Like Dr. Ripley said, this is a place that the Wind Orchestra goes every time we're in Japan because it's so meaningful. So having gone there 3 years ago and then going back, it was still just as impactful. And there were some things that I still specifically remembered from it. They were that monumental. But then aside from seeing a lot of the tragedy and the history, there's also a big sense of hope there. And all the tour guides, when you're throughout the park, it's a very positive experience.
I've always wondered what it would be like to be an American visiting Hiroshima and how you would be welcomed, or if you would be welcomed, since of course it is America that dropped the bomb on Hiroshima. Did any of you have any misgivings of that nature? I mean, kind of wondering about that, and what did it feel like to be an American visiting a place like that?
Well, it was definitely a powerful experience, to say the least. But I get the sense that they as in the ones who upkeep the museum, that explained the whole, how everything went down and all the memorials and such, I get the sense that they recognize that, like, us, the modern people of this day and age, weren't the ones to commit those atrocities, and they don't hold any resentment towards us. They're just hopeful towards a better future in which something like that will never happen again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, there is no undertones of, like, blame or resentment or anything at all, like, in the museum, which was incredible. It was, everything was focused on this should be peace, and we need to have peace, and we should make peace with this and prevent it from happening again, which was incredible as well.
So it is actually a museum? I mean, it's not just a monument to peace, but a museum?
So there is the museum, which takes you through what happened and then during and the aftermath. And, I mean, I don't think there was a dry eye in the museum. It was very, very moving. And then afterward, there is the actual Peace Park itself, which is a park dedicated to peace, and they have an eternal flame that they'll blow out when, or that they'll put out when denuclearization has been achieved. And there's monuments that people make thousands of paper cranes for as symbols of peace. So there's those two components, and I'm very happy we got to see both.
Yeah. What sorts of things are in the museum? Are there particular artifacts that survive from 1945 to help, in a sense, recreate what occurred, to give you kind of a tangible sense of what happened?
Yeah, we saw a lot of, like, clothing, pieces of clothing, or, like, pieces of scrap metal and that sort of thing, which was powerful.
Yeah,
lots of pictures, too, which was very moving to actually see some of the effects from the bomb. And then there is also artwork from people who survived and who painted what they saw that day. So, and then there are also stories as well.
Wow. How is the Peace Park laid out? I mean, what are you sort of seeing or walking through?
I think the general layout is that the museum sits on one end, and then there is a the flame and I'm
like
trying
a reflection
to remember.
Pond.
Right.
Ah.
And then at the far end of the Peace Park, though, is the A-bomb dome, which is the surviving building from the explosion.
And a lot of people have seen that iconic image, which for many people, in a sense, is Hiroshima.
Right.
Yeah. How big is Hiroshima? I don't even know how large a city that is and what survives in the... So essentially that building is just about all that survives from the blast itself.
Right. And that's the most miraculous thing about it, is that as you're visiting, you would not have any inclination that this had happened. But the city was just totally devastated, just completely. And everything that's there was built up after 1946.
Wow, incredible. Well, I can just tell from the way you are describing this that this was a profoundly moving and powerful experience for all of you. And it was interesting to hear, Mariah, you say that you were grateful for the chance to go back.
Right.
I remember when I took the Carthage Choir to Europe in 2000, we visited Dachau, and there were several seniors who had been to Dachau before, and they very respectfully chose to remain on the bus. I mean, not out of disinterest, but they just did not want to put themselves in that place again. Once was enough, in a sense. But I guess this is a little bit different than that, and this place represents something beyond the initial tragedy that caused it.
Right. It still hit just as hard, but the uplifting part was also just as strong.
Very good. So tell us about some of the other things you experienced aside from this really poignant visit to Hiroshima, other things that were enjoyable or meaningful experiences for you more as visitors to the country and tourists?
You know, I think one of the most meaningful moments for me was at Sakyo University. We had met with the saxophone professor who, Dr. Ripley, you're going to have to help me with his name.
Nagase.
Right, so he was the one who did a lot of the coordinating for us to be at Sakyo, and so we went to their performance space, which was really similar to the chapel, actually, in that their performance space is modeled after a Buddhist temple. And it's also a performance space, so that was neat. But he said he wanted to thank us for being there and share music with us since we were there sharing music with him. So he got his saxophone out, and he played three verses of O Danny Boy.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, and he said the first verse was for himself, and the second verse was for us and for Carthage and Kenosha, and the third verse was for the world. It was incredible. I don't think there was a dry eye in the audience. It was amazing. And I think it was the most like fervently I've ever seen anybody believe that like music could be a gift, that it could be something that you could like physically share with someone. And I'm getting choked up again thinking about it. But there's an overwhelming sense of welcoming throughout the entire opening to the trip. But we got there and he played for us, and it felt more like belonging. Like it felt like we belonged there, and it was incredible that we, through music, like though we were like born in the U.S. and we live in the U.S. and everything, we felt the sense that we could belong in Japan as well, and that was an incredible musical experience and a musical moment for us.
And the fact that music made that possible.
Just
thinking back to the Carthage Choir again, the gentleman who arranged the Europe tours back in those days, Vernon Sell, had a saying which was, music opens many doors. And it sounds like you experienced that very, very powerfully. Any other stories you want to share from Japan in terms of people you met or things you experienced that were especially memorable?
I just couldn't agree with Katie Ann more. I just remember being in our concerts and thinking, due to a language barrier, can't communicate with these people around me, and yet right now, despite speaking different languages, we are all hearing the same thing, and we're all feeling the same emotions, and we're sharing that, and it was amazing.
Very good. Dr. Ripley, what is the tradition there in terms of this kind of music? You made passing reference to the fact that they have maybe a particular sound or a particular approach that's a little bit different from the typical wind orchestra here, and I assume it's partly because they probably aren't playing too many John Philip Sousa marches or whatever, but I mean, I'm sure there's much more to it than that.
Right. The sound of the Japanese groups is one that's pretty significantly centered around the clarinets and the saxophones as being blended together as kind of the primary melodic voice, and things like the trumpets and the trombones are very much in the background. The other kinds of colors that come in are used judiciously. Maybe only once or twice in a piece you'll hear something that really kind of stands out as colorful. Otherwise, it's more of a sense of the music being in what Percy Grainger used to call tone strands. I'm not exactly sure how to describe that. But with the wind orchestra, the goal is to be able to hear everybody individually. And it becomes a chamber ensemble of 45 people when we do it the best that we can. But that means that we don't necessarily blend those sounds together all the time. And so when we do the Japanese music, that's the goal.
Interesting. Do Japanese groups like a wind orchestra have instruments that we don't have? I mean, specifically Japanese instruments, or by and large, are their groups populated with exactly the same instruments?
Sometimes there's traditional drums that come into play. On occasion, there'll be a Japanese flute that's used as a solo instrument. But for the most part, the Japanese bands are playing with the same kind of instrumentation and instruments that we have. After the reconstruction, it was really modeled after a band in Paris that was in residence there, and then other large groups that came to Tokyo, and that kind of became the sound of the Japanese band.
We can't finish this out without finding out what you were eating in Japan. So Glory stories or horror stories about what you ate in Japan?
We had ice cream that was cherry blossom and bamboo swirled. That was very interesting. Yeah, it was really good, though.
Wow. Other high points or low points?
Well, I guess I have a dairy allergy, so on the plane I was served a special meal, which was a whole fish. Scales and all.
Oh, dear. You wondered, what have I gotten myself into here?
Yeah, so that was interesting. Yeah. But other than that, it was all uphill from there. It was all very good.
All right, very good. Any other things you fondly remember?
I've probably had the best ramen I've ever had and ever will have.
Ramen. Oh, ramen.
Yeah, ramen.
Oh,
okay. Ramen. Yeah. It was incredible. What city was that in?
No, I don't remember.
Oh, that's okay. It was near the end of our trip. And yeah, I think it was Kyoto, but it was good stuff.
I didn't realize ramen could be wonderful. I knew ramen could be cheap, but I guess it can be. Very good. So you were well fed, but more importantly, you were very well welcomed to Japan. It sounds like all of you have nothing but the best feelings about what you experienced there. So, Dr. Ripley, tell us something about the homecoming concert that the Wind Orchestra is going to be playing Sunday afternoon and a couple of the specific pieces that are part of this.
Sure. The program largely starts with our Japanese selections, including a work called Cyber Trip, very fast-paced and almost like surfing the web in the changes of tempo that are involved with that piece. And then we move actually to Katie Ann's solo after that. And then we move into more of the American pieces, including a work by David Reeves called Respite that we're doing in honor of a former student of ours, percussionist John Larson, who passed away over the summer. And so that's a special work for us. It's moving, but it's also very joyful at times, a lot like John's own character. And then we have the Western Hemisphere premiere of Shield Maiden, which includes imitations of an old Norse brass instrument called the lyre. People just have to come to experience what that's like. But then also after this kind of call to battle by the lyre, then there are other types of activities, I'll just call it that, that also leads up to a battle sequence, including some foot stomps, and it's really a very inventive work. Jocelyn loved writing this, and it's really very inspired writing.
So this was a commission from Carthage, or a commission that Carthage was part of?
No, this was entirely from Carthage this time as part of the 150th anniversary of Carthage Women.
Fantastic. And so this was played in Japan, but this is the first time any of us are going to get to hear this brand new and exciting work.
Right. It's truly remarkable.
Wow.
I think for the most part, the audience felt the most connected to that one as we played any of our pieces.
Wow. Great. So all of that and more is going to be offered up in the Wind Orchestra's homecoming concert, which is this Sunday afternoon, 2 o'clock in Siebert Chapel. And it sounds like it'll be a nice crowning glory to what was just an amazing experience for all of you. As I mentioned in passing, you are all music ed majors. What are your hopes after Carthage in terms of exactly what kind of music educating you hope to do? Let's start with our freshman, Miley Riedel.
I'm one of those people who doesn't shy away from middle schoolers.
Ooh.
So I've decided to run toward that, and I would just love to be a middle school band teacher.
Wow. Well, God bless you, and we wish you well with that. There's nothing more satisfying than connecting with middle school students. So that's great. Katie Ann Nelson, triple threat singer, clarinetist, and pianist. Do you even have a sense of what you hope will happen after Carthage?
I'm hoping that I'll figure it out. Arrive to some conclusion, but I don't know. We'll see where the road goes.
That's just fine. Tim Wagner.
I'm hoping to get a position as a high school choral director, but I would definitely love to stay within the band world as well.
Very good. Yes, a instrumentalist and singer like Katie Ann. And finally, Mariah Honick, our senior. I hope you have some sense of it since the horizon is pretty close for you.
Yes. Ultimately, I'd like to be a high school band director, and I actually get to start student teaching on Monday.
Whoa! All right.
At Horlick High School in Racine.
Oh, terrific. Well, here it is. Well, we really appreciate all of you joining us today on the morning show to share some stories about your time in Japan. And we hope that you'll have a very successful homecoming concert on Sunday afternoon and all that follows after. So Miley Riedel and Katie Ann Nelson, Tim Wagner, Mariah Honick, thank you for being part of the morning show today.
Thank you so much.
And Dr. James Ripley, the boss, great to have you here as well. And it's wonderful to hear about yet another successful tour to Japan.
Thanks, Greg. It's always good to talk about an experience like this.
Yeah. It makes it all worth it. Very good. Well, thank you again for being part of today's morning show. On Monday's morning show, something related to instrumental music in a very exciting way. On Monday, I'm going to replay what's probably the oldest interview that I still have in my possession, and I don't even have all of it, but have 20 minutes preserved of an interview I recorded back in 1990 with Barry Tuckwell, a name that might not mean anything to the young people in the room, but to Dr. Ripley. Barry Tuckwell was, in his heyday, the finest French horn player in the world. And he came to Little Kenosha back in 1990 to play with the Kenosha Symphony as part of their 50th anniversary season. And he actually came to the studios of WGTD to do a morning show interview. So I dug into my pile of old cassettes and found what remains of that interview, and we're going to replay that on Monday because Barry Tuckwell recently passed away at the age of 88, a superb musician. And we'll hear just a couple minutes of him playing the second horn concerto of Richard Strauss to finish out the hour here on WGTD. The great Barry Tuckwell. And again, My interview from 1990 with Barry Tuckwell will be replayed on Monday's morning show. We remind you that the morning show is archived on our website, wgtd.org, and it's also available now as a podcast through Spotify, Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, but make sure that you search for the right title,